My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER, promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. All right, happy Super Bowl Friday, and we are glad you are with us. There's a ton of great news out there that I am excited to share with you. A lot of it about the economy. I want to go over this. We'll get back into just how extreme this new radical, extremist, Democratic Socialist Party is becoming on every level. And you know, I actually had said to a friend of mine, I think I need about 100 days before the Democrats absolutely expose themselves to the American people for who they really are. I think we're right almost there. It didn't take 100 days of them being in office. We'll hit that. We've got a lot of news about how the media has been wrong on their reporting about that Trump Tower meeting for all this time. When do they ever acknowledge that they've been wrong so regularly, so often, so consistently, and maybe take responsibility and maybe rework what they're doing, but they seem to get away with it all the time? We have an update on the border, and there's a lot there that we're going to hit in the course of the program. I haven't asked everybody on my team yet who they're cheering for in the Super Bowl. So we got the Super Bowl set for Sunday, and it's the Rams and, shockingly, the New England Patriots again. How do you – you've got to give credit. And for whatever reason, people hate Tom Brady, hate Bill Belichick, hate the Patriots. I don't hate them at all. I look at them with amazement that if you look at the NFL and spending caps, it's a league that is designed to create, to be more competitive, which, by the way, kind of goes against free market capitalism in my view. I think that people should get paid whatever they want. One team wants to spend X dollars, they should be able to spend it. Whether they, win this, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to win. It just puts you in a better position to win. If you want to spend the money and you want to bring fans into your stadium and the other people don't, that should be what the free market calls for. So it is a Super Bowl. Now, already we're hearing about, well, first of all, Linda, who are you supporting for the Super Bowl? Who do you want to win? Who are you pulling for to win? Is that a bad question?
Oh, my mic's not working.
Your mic's not working. Actually,
it is. Oh, it is working. Well, my light's not working.
You.
That's weird. Let's see. I don't know anything about sports. So I start all my decision making by the animals, but I did,
by the animals. So
yeah.
We got the Rams and the Patriots. So you're calling Patriots animals?
Well, I wasn't done talking before you interrupted me.
Okay.
So when there's not an animal to pick from, then I go by colors. So what are their colors?
Okay.
Oh, see, you don't know either. Oh. No,
I actually do, but if I have to tell you the colors and the colors become your reason for the pick, the audience is like rolling their eyes in the back of their head. The rest of the country that's not watching the lingerie or the puppy bowl alternatives that are out there. Who are you going for, sweet baby? He's going for the Pats. Yeah. I it's so funny. Now, look, I like the New York Jets. I like the Giants. They had
what about
season.
The kid, though? Did you hear about the kid? Did you hear about Ace Davis in Kentucky?
Mm-hmm. What about?
So Ace Davis did his science fair on Tom Brady and Deflategate. You remember we covered that.
Right.
And he has decided that Tom Brady's a cheater. This little boy. And he won his science fair.
Well, he ended up eventually after he fought it and fought it and fought it. And the idea is that he purposely took some of the pressure off, which he maybe felt more comfortable at one level of pressure. Listen, this
was
the NFL's
mistake.
Mistake.
You know what that sounds like, right?
Making an excuse?
Uh-huh, yeah.
No, that's what the accusation was. Do I know with any certainty that he did it? No.
Okay.
You know, there's so much scientific analysis. Well, did you take out a half a PSI pressure out of the ball, and does it really help? I mean, it's ridiculous to me. And you can't, but for people hate Brady. I'm going to tell you why they hate him. They hate him because he's that good. They hate that he beats them. He is even, what is he going for? Super Bowl ring number 7, or whatever it is. They hate, you know, also, oh, he married a pretty model. They hate that too. They hate Belichick because Belichick has somehow risen above every other team with an ability to take whatever players he has and bring more out of them than other teams are able to bring out of their players. And that you have to stand back and say, wow, there's something pretty amazing about that part. And you got to give credit where credit is due. They're outworking, outsmarting their competition. That's what they're doing. Ethan, who are you going for?
I'm rooting for the Patriots just because it's the most capitalistic thing you can do, because I love that they're going to win again, I think. And number two, I think if liberals had their way, they'd probably want Tom Brady to retire because he's already won enough. So I think it just speaks against liberals. I think they'll flip out if he wins again.
Yeah, look, for me, it's I would just say if you're betting, first of all, if I cheer for anything, I cheer for a lot of great food, because Super Bowl Sunday for me is a massive cheat day.
Well, listen, I just want to say one thing. I'm not saying that Tom Brady shouldn't win.
We're going to D.C., so whenever I'm on the road, I cheat too in terms of eating all the food I shouldn't.
I'll be at the gym every day if you want to come and meet me early in the morning. Get your run on. We'll keep you nice and fit and trim.
No. I am eating any food I want on Sunday. That's it. End of this.
Well, what are you going to eat?
It's not a discussion.
Favorite food to eat on Super Bowl Sunday.
You know what my favorite junk food is? McDonald's, Wendy's pizza, and Philly cheesesteaks.
I'm sorry. What was that?
French
McDonald's,
fries.
Wendy's pizza? Is that like one meal?
No. I like Wendy's. I like McDonald's.
Okay.
I like the Wendy's quarter single.
So there's like a comma in there. First we do McDonald's.
Ketchup,
we'll do like
pickles,
the breakfast
onions.
Sandwich.
I don't think anyone wants us then, but I prefer the quarter pounder with cheese. Because I'm always trying to be better in what I eat. I've tried this new cauliflower crust pizza, and it doesn't have it's gluten free, no carbs, and it just doesn't cut it. I mean, it's.
I think that the cauliflower pizza is awesome. You just have to be very, very close to a restroom.
Well, there's a. Oh, good grief. Why do I even talk to you? You want to pick out the Super Bowl winners by the color of the uniform.
Listen, let me tell you something.
Listen, first of all,
let me tell you something. I have won many a friendly Super Bowl pool just by my color picks and my animal picks.
Well, let's say I'm in a pool. Oh, crap. I forgot to pay the guy. Just kidding.
You're definitely not winning.
I'm probably definitely not winning. I've never won it yet.
And see, now I've won it 4 times.
So did you hear? So we always have controversy. I don't know if we're going to get back to the wardrobe malfunction aspects of the Super Bowl. And then, of course, the whole issue with Colin Kaepernick. But you had Rihanna, Pink, Cardi B turning down the offer to headline. They finally booked Maroon 5. And, they've sold 100 million, records, a lot of number one hits. And there's all the calls again to protest the NFL, et cetera, and the kneeling and so on and so forth. After Maroon 5 accepted, apparently a couple of prominent rappers signed on. And the move appeared to be an attempt by the NFL to soothe the anger, not only over Kaepernick, but also, why do we have to have politics in the Super Bowl? Can we just have one day without politics? Just one. And I believe in free speech, but we'll see. I just don't bet against Brady and Belichick. I think they're too good at what they do. They have been able to crack a code in a way that, and the fact that it hasn't been duplicated is amazing to me. Because you would think that, all right, if I was running a football team, I would look at everything that they have done. Robert Kraft, the owner, Bill Belichick, the coach, Tom Brady, the quarterback, the leader of the team, I would look at every single year, every move they have made, and I would see how they did it. Because they've been able to do something that the other teams can't do or compete with. That's why they keep ending up back in the Super Bowl with a different cast of characters. You know, of course, you got Gronk, you got Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady on multiple occasions has given money back to the team to get a lower salary so they can get better players. So he's a competitive guy that's fighting hard to win, and I don't think there's any better quarterback, frankly, ever to have played the game. And it's fascinating to watch. And if it's 2 minutes left and the Patriots are down six, I'd bet they're going to win. That's what I would say. By the way, my sensei just writes me, no McDonald's. Oh, why every time I open my big fat mouth, somebody that I know is going to see, no, you can't. All right, let me start with some good news today. And one, labor force participation rate. Remember, during the Obama years, the lowest since the 1970s, it is now in the Trump era at an all-time high in January of 63.2%. The economy added a really strong 304,000 jobs last month, higher than analysts, again, were expecting. The number of employed Americans, just slightly below last month's number, which was a record, but the labor force participation rate went up, and it's the highest it's been literally in so many years. What does that mean? You know, it's very funny because this week, you know, once the shutdown ended and the president said, all right, they're not even talking to me. They're going on junkets paid for by lobbyists. They won't come to the table. They send aides to negotiate with the vice president of the United States. Furloughed workers need their checks. They're even beginning to shut down airports. They won't budge an inch because they just hate him so much, even though the president, reasonable, negotiating, offering them things that they say that they've wanted for years, including supporting building a wall and sounding like Trump just a few short years ago. And I said when he was running, I said he's going to govern as a conservative. And many people, because he was in New York at one time pro-choice, he's now like the most pro-life president you'd know in our lifetime. And that he was going to keep his promises on Supreme Court justices, on tax cuts, and ending burdensome regulation. And I kept asking him, because energy is a big thing of mine, because I really know in my heart and soul that means that hundreds of thousands of Americans are going to get great, high-paying career jobs that will change the entire trajectory of their life. And we have the added bonus of not being dependent on countries that hate us for the lifeblood of our economy. So you watch this conservatism works. Some of you doubted that Trump would do all of these things. Trade deals, getting NATO to pay their fair share, Canada, Mexico. When you think of now the negotiations this week with China, a little rocket man, we're going to have, you know, another summit coming up probably this month. It's amazing. And some of you doubted me. So many said, well, he donated to Hillary. Well, he once said this, he wasn't pro-life. Well, he also explained what made him pro-choice, what made him pro-life, and how he changed from being pro-quote choice. And I'm telling all of you the doubt. He is the single most unrelenting, and I've known him so many years, which is why I confidently could tell you he would keep his promises and govern as a conservative, which he's done. I've been proven right, like I was proven right that Obama was a rigid radical ideologue whose policies would fail, and they did. Conservative policies that the president has implemented has now created 5 million new jobs. That's the forgotten men and women that we were talking about in 2016. And he's not given up at all. He will get the border wall money. He is going to fight till every single solitary day to get that money. And if it means going to the courts, national emergency, sending the military, sent 5,000 more troops because you got three separate caravans now on their way here. Hey, if you're one of 34 million Americans that smokes, you know what a hassle it can be. For me, I'm out playing golf and I come back smelling like cigars. It's the smell on your hands and your breath, your clothes. But now, thanks to Juul, You don't have to worry about it anymore. Juul is a vaporizer. It does contain nicotine for a satisfying transition. Now, when I found Juul, it was a complete game changer in my life. I don't smoke any cigars any longer, and Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to whatever it is you're smoking. So if you're one of 34 million adults who do smoke, cigars, cigarettes, pipe, whatever, well, there is an alternative to all of them. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's like nothing you've ever tried, just visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. Now, warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is addictive. Aaron Rodgers' father on the line. You really, if I get pranked, Linda, that's going to be your fault. Ed Rodgers apparently lives in, California. We'll just say that. You're the father of the great quarterback, Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, sir.
Well, you should be one very proud father because he is an amazing champion in his own right. And I bet you wish you were in Atlanta this weekend playing watching the game.
Absolutely. It was sure fun. 8 years ago, we went to Dallas, played the Steelers. So, yeah, it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I know a lot of great quarterbacks don't even make it that far. So I was pretty excited that we were able to do that his third year in the league. So,
well, you know what's amazing? I mean, you say once-in-a-lifetime. I was making the point about the Patriots. You know, there's something that I think that Belichick and – you know, Brady, the chemistry they have figured out that other teams haven't figured out. Now, Green Bay is a great team, and your son has made it to the upper echelon of in terms of quarterbacks throughout history of the NFL. And I mean that sincerely. I mean, he's one of the most amazing quarterbacks I've seen. He throws bullets like I've never seen. What are your thoughts about it?
About the Patriots?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty amazing organization. I know a lot of people don't like him because they win every year, but you got to totally respect him. He's been a good mentor for my son over the years, Brady has. And, you know, from the top down, it's amazing. You think about they get the last pick or near last pick in the draft every year, but they seem to have a top five defense, sometimes the number one defense. Their offense is amazing. They're creative. The coach, you know, right, is able to adjust on the fly.
If you can just stay there through this break, I really want to dig a little deeper into how Brady was a mentor to Aaron. Aaron Rodgers' father's with us. By the way, they won the Super Bowl, I forget what number. He was the MVP. I do remember that. You know, he's been in the Pro Bowl almost every year, and I think twice the NFL's most valuable player. Quick break. We'll come back on the other side and go down this road. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. If you're just joining us, we started the show. Linda wants to pick who's going to win the Super Bowl by the team colors. I give up. I can't help her. We just got a call before the break. Aaron Rodgers, franchise quarterback of the great Green Bay Packers, is calling to the show. We're 99% sure it's him. And you've got to be so proud of the fact. Before I get to the question I want to ask you about Brady and Aaron is, you know, look, the average NFL career is like 3.5 years or somewhere in that area. Your son has been able to get into this elite group that we define as a franchise quarterback. He's won a Super Bowl, MVP in a Super Bowl, NFL, you know, most valuable player, I think once or twice. Yep. And I just got to imagine as a father that there's nothing better to see all of this success and how he's been able to achieve it. What insight can you give people into this?
Well, it's been different. I mean, think about the levels as I've mentored a lot of parents along the way for your kids as they're growing up. And I mean, you can't dream this big when they're in high school, you know, you just kind of, well, maybe they'll go to college when they're in college. I mean, you can't dream they'll be at the next level. So it's been a pretty interesting ride. I mean, it's not always been pleasant. Honestly, it's been kind of crazy. I'm a chiropractor. I get you know, I've got a lot of exposure. People know me here and I get a lot of weird requests and stuff. So it's been kind of, you know, pluses and minuses. And, you know, when your son gets hurt, it's not very fun. So, anyway, it's been an interesting ride. I certainly wouldn't trade it. I love the fact that he's doing his dream, you know, a dream as a kid. So, but, yeah.
You know, I've actually been a sport parent myself. I don't want to talk about my kids and what they do, but I've spent many, many weekends in their growing up years traveling the country for what they do. And what I love about sports, Ed, and I'm sure you do as well, is sports to me is a mirror reflection of life in as much as the harder you work, the better you do. You've got to learn you don't always win in life. You got to learn to be a good winner, and you got to learn to take your hits, your losses, and pick yourself up and come back fighting hard the next day or the next week in the case of football. And it just, to me, it reflects life and the best of life, and that you strive for goals and you try to achieve them. You don't always make it, but you're trying.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, think about the trials and tribulations these guys go through. Yeah, I love mentoring young kids because – you know, even at young levels, I mean, there's, you know, got to teach kids how to face losses, you know, and pick yourself back up, keep going. You know, you don't quit, you don't give up. So it's fun. It's been great to be able to interact with a lot of young athletes and kind of just be able to help them with life lessons.
That's exactly right. Life lessons. Yeah, and by the way, I think I'm too competitive. Watching your kids play sports is torture. Don't you agree?
No, it's terrible. I mean, it's
terrible.
Yeah,
it's awful.
Ups and downs. You know, you're as low as they are when they lose and high as they are when they're up. And it's just this roller coaster. It's crazy sometimes.
Oh, you know, the great thing, and I would finally get perspective at different times in my mind. And I'd say, even if it wasn't a great weekend, win losses or whatever it happened to be, I'd always say, well, they weren't hanging out with their dopey friends. They're not drinking.
right.
Or God forbid, look at the opioid crisis. They're not doing that. And even though maybe it wasn't the outcome we wanted, hoped for, or expected, okay, they weren't in trouble. And then you pick yourself up and go again. Let me ask you before the break. You mentioned, because I look at Brady and Belichick and Robert Kraft, and I think they've cracked a code that other teams haven't cracked. That's my own personal opinion. And nothing against the Packers. I love the Packers. I love that you can own a piece of the Packers, which is very cool. But you said to me that Brady's been a mentor to Aaron, and that I'm very curious in what way.
Yeah, you know, I'm not privy to a lot of the private stuff they go through, but I do know things you've told me, like just simple things like diet and exercise, how to handle yourself as a pro. How do you deal with trials? You know, things don't go your way. Certain coaches you may not agree with and like. I mean, a lot of things like that. You know, I think, you know, Brady obviously wants to play to 45. I think my son does too. You know, so, you know, there's a lot of those things. Obviously, keeping your body and your mind intact are huge. You know, so I think those are cool things that he's been a real good mentor for. So I appreciate him at that level.
Now, do you go to many of the games still, or do you just watch on TV, or what do you do?
Well, you know, we've gotten to know a lot of people there in Green Bay, so it's just really fun. We've had a lot of friends. Super Bowl year, I think we went to 9 games. Obviously, it's a little far from Chico, and certainly I hate when it's 30, minus 30 or something, you know. But
crazy.
It's certainly fun to watch it there because it's a totally different experience with that. You know, it's the only game in town for miles, and people are crazy about the team, and they're super friendly in the Midwest. It's just the you know, they're honest, you know, they are who they are, you know, and they're just great people. So it's really fun to be around, fun to be in that crowd and, you know, cheer with them. And we've had a box number of years as well, but I love being in the crowd with the people too. So it's really been fun.
You know, it's one of the things I do love about football, and you see this a lot. Oh, sometimes they don't air it, but, you know, these guys are trying to kill each other during the game. And it is a, you know, you talk about gladiators. This is a gladiator sport. And by the way, these guys know, look at Joe Theismann. I can't even look at that video again. And I've become friendly with him, and I like him a lot. He's a wonderful guy. And what's so amazing is that you watch football, and what fascinates me, and I think your son, Aaron, he's one of those people that have reached that elite level when they're doing the two-minute drill down the field, down by six. You just know the odds are really high that Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, you know, certain quarterbacks are going to get, you know, Brett Favre in Green Bay before your son. Yeah. You just know that the odds are high that they're going to get it in the end zone. On that part, and you watch the slow-mo, you know, replay, and you see that, you know, every quarterback has to thread needles. It's fascinating to me. It's such almost like art and perfection in the way they do it.
Yeah, it really is an art. I mean, you think about the small windows they have to throw those ball through in you know, half the time, you know, 270-pound lineman is chasing it down and all that stuff. So it's just throwing off one foot, throwing out of balance. Just like, it's a talent's crazy. I totally agree. Those guys that do it well, and then, Brees, Aaron, all those guys, pretty amazing.
Yeah, Drew Brees is another one. You know, but then at the end of it, to finish the thought, you know, these guys that were trying to kill each other, gladiators, and they often, you know, all the teams, even sometimes the officials, you know, get in a circle, say prayers, and they really seem to have a camaraderie and respect.
No, I totally agree. It was just really cool to see. You know, I love the prayer huddles at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got chaplains. I mean, it's just it's great. You know, it really is a camaraderie. It's really fun to see.
Yeah. Look, it's a gladiator warrior sport. And I think that's why people like it, respect it so much. You put it all on the line and... I don't know. I just I love that part of athletic sports in a lot of ways. And well, you should be very proud. I'm honored that you were listening to the show to be, you know, and I appreciate it very much. And please tell your son I'm a big fan. And I wish him and your family all the best. And thanks for sharing all those stories with us.
Yeah, well, we've been big fans of yours for many years. I've been trying to get in actually for about a year, so I'm glad I was able.
By the way, no, don't say Aaron's. Don't say Aaron likes me. It's not going to be good for him. Don't. Aaron does not like me.
That's
don't worry.
Okay. He's a funny. I know.
Listen, God bless you and your family, and
thank you.
Good luck next year for him. And who do you think is going to win this weekend? Any predictions?
I'm rooting for the Rams, but I think Patriots going to pull it off.
Okay, I don't think you can bet against Belichick, Robert Kraft, and Tom Brady. It's really hard to.
Really is. Yeah.
All right. Ed Rodgers, the father of Aaron Rodgers, franchise quarterback, obviously, for the Green Bay Packers. Wow, how cool is that? I am. If you watch sports, like think of a slow-mo replay of a quarterback. Everybody loves over-the-shoulder, you know, 50-yard pass. And so they'll do it in slow motion sometimes and there's a lineman, literally it's less than an inch from his fingertips from stopping that ball. And then it's just perfectly thrown. And Aaron Rodgers is great at this, has a great arm. Over the shoulder, into the hands of the receiver, just off the fingertips of the defensive player, cornerback, whoever it happens to be. It's incredible. That's why we love this. And that's why I like hope no politics on Super Bowl Sunday, but likely not going to happen. All right, let me get back to this great news. This news is so phenomenal. I just want to share it again because nobody in the media will. You know, having my blue-collar roots and 2 decades of my life between restaurants and construction in me before I ever got into radio at, 27 or so, 30 years ago, is I just relate to it. Spend my life struggling to, you know, paycheck to paycheck. And you see that, you know, conservatism, and I've known with all my heart, mind, and soul works. You know, I put myself lead with my chin, and I've told you that Donald Trump would govern as a conservative. That's why I have 99.9% faith he's going to get the money for the wall. And some of you doubt, but he has a great track record in fulfilling his conservative promises. You know, labor force participation now at a Trump era high, 63.2%, you know, way exceeding expectations, another 304,000 jobs that are created. There have been, since Donald Trump's elected, 5.3 million jobs created in this country. What did I always say in 2016? The forgotten man, the forgotten woman. The 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, lowest labor participation rate since the 70s, lowest home ownership rate in 51 years, worst recovery since the 40s, took on more debt than all 43 presidents before him combined. And especially I see in January, significant construction job growth. That's good for every aspect of the economy. 52,000 jobs, transportation, warehouses, mining, logging. This is an amazing achievement. Why? Because conservatism works. So knowing Trump, I told you he would do this. Biggest tax cut in history. And I'm telling you, he's not stopping in the fight for the wall. We're going to play some of his press conference from earlier today. And, you know, average hourly earnings over the last 12 months, for that's rank and file forgotten men and women, 3.2%. You know, six straight months of year-over-year wage gains, you know, at or above 3%. These are just phenomenal statistics. By the way, I'm not the big Wall Street guy that says, oh, Wall Street is the best indicator, but you heard a lot about it when it went down in December. Not all the times it was going up since he's been president. You know, January was the best year in terms of Wall Street in 30 years, this past month. And, you know, it's leaving, you know, all these, and this is what now America is going to have to decide between now and 2020. You've got now Democrats that want to, quote, tax the rich. By the way, the bottom 50% of wage earners, they only pay 2% of federal income taxes. 20% of Americans actually pay 90% of the bill. We have wealth redistribution. They do pay their fair share. Now you got Congresswoman Omar, who's been hit with those charges of anti-Semitism that we've chronicled. She wants a 90% tax rate, outdoing Ocasio-Cortez. You know, look at what the president tweeted this week. This is what, the party of late-term abortion, open borders, crime, higher taxes. That's, you know, all of this is now, we are now seeing what we didn't see in 2018, which I told you they were purposely hiding, their real agenda. Endless investigations, impeachment, but don't say the words. And literally taking America down a course that has been proven to fail over and over. You know, Elizabeth Warren says all these people cheat to get this. No, people don't cheat to get their money. You know, we're not going to give a dollar for the wall, but they supported that just a few years ago because Obama was president. You know, you've got literally what, Kamala Harris. She wants to take away the private insurance of 177 million Americans and say, trust us, Medicare for all. Well, that's $3.2 trillion a year, almost the entire federal budget, almost all of it. And, you know, oh, Linda's talking to me here. What is she saying? I'm going to get to it in a second. And all of these people that are running for president, they all want to out-liberal each other. Support. This is now the radical, extremist, democratic socialist party. The party that believes in redistribution, socialism, government control of every aspect of your life. And you can compare it to the failure of Obama, success of Trump. How do you never Trumpers feel? Uh-oh. The president compromised by the bad actor Vladimir Putin, the bad nation of Russia. Well, they are a hostile nation. Wait a minute. They just suspended their nuclear treaty with Russia. And they accused them of cheating. Donald Trump did that. So I assume any minute now, Vladimir is going to dump all of this garbage that the liberal hate Trump media and Democrats have been telling us he's been so compromised for so long. Also, it turns out that that meeting with Donald Trump at Trump Tower, Donald Trump Jr., fake news. Are they going to apologize?
Well, he told the attorneys that I'm not a subject. I'm not a target of. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He said about the SDNY investigation too.
About which?
The SDNY investigation. Because there's two. There's Mueller and there's Cohen.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Okay.
I don't know about.
Ron has never said anything to you about whether you're a target at all in terms of what they were looking for on Cohen. Has that ever come up?
No, I don't. We didn't discuss it.
Now, what's fascinating about this, by the way, glad you're with us. Hour two, Sean Hannity show, you know, Rosenstein telling the attorneys, I'm not the subject of an investigation. Now, for all the talk about, well, how compromised is Donald Trump with Russia? Excuse me, how is it that the guy that's so compromised announced that old Vladimir, the hostile actor that he is in Russia, the hostile regime that we have known for way before 2016, loves to cause chaos in elections, not just ours, but others. Devin Nunes warning everybody in 2014. But, you know, for all the people in the phony hate Trump media, Trump calls Putin's bluff on Russia nuclear weapons and their buildup. Well, what happens to the theory that Trump and Vladimir are in cahoots together and that Donald Trump is compromised? Because the Trump administration announced today that they would suspend their obligations under the decades-old Cold War arms control pact with Russia starting tomorrow, citing Moscow's violations of the treaty. Now, you would think the president's so compromised, he wouldn't be able to do that. Well, apparently he is. And remember the breathless reporting that went on all throughout the media. Donald Jr., after the meeting, which we now know was about Russian adoption and had nothing to do with any research, everybody in the meeting said it was a waste of time, although this Russian lawyer met with Fusion GPS both before and after the meeting at Trump Tower, the infamous meeting. Well, it turns out that the unknown number that the media was telling you for however long, breathlessly, hysterically, was a call from Don Jr. to the president right after that meeting. Never mind, more fake news. I mean, it's unbelievable. Anyway, joining us now, Greg Jarrett, Fox News analyst, author of the number one bestseller, The Russian Hoax. By the way, out in paperback, February 12th. We have details on Hannity.com. David Schoen with us, civil liberties attorney, criminal rights attorney. And thank you both for being with us. You know,
my
Greg, you know, if somebody was compromised, why would you do what the White House did today and literally, you know, call out their failure to adhere to a treaty we had? Well, it sounds like if he was so compromised, he'd never be able to pull off a move like that, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. Not only that, but if you examine the record carefully, you see that President Trump has championed more sanctions against Russia in the first 2 years in office than Obama did in 8 years. A lot of presidential candidates and indeed presidents, George Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump, had all at one point in time vowed to try to improve relationships with our enemy, Russia. In the end, it never works. One of the primary basis for investigating the president for Trump-Russian collusion was the fact that the FBI and the CIA and others in the Obama administration didn't like the statement by President Trump that he was going to improve relations with Russia. So they went after him with a vengeance, ignoring the fact that Barack Obama and George Bush had done the same thing. Remember Hillary Clinton's famous reset button with Russia and Obama confiding in Medvedev? You know,
no, it goes like this. It goes, listen, tell Vladimir I'll have more flexibility after the election. Tell that to Vladimir. I will convey to Vladimir. Yes. That sounded like collusion to me.
That's a great imitation, but I mean, the whole Trump-Russia collusion hoax was based on the fact that the FBI and the CIA didn't like the fact that the president was offering to reach out to Russia to improve relations. Well, everybody does that.
What's your take, David Cho?
You've talked about the double standard in the criminal justice system. This is also the double standard at work in foreign relations. It's part of this. Damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, frankly. Anything Trump does, the Democrats are for the opposite. But look at it. Obama spoke to the world's worst anti-American, American-hating tyrants. His theory was abandon our friends, talk to the worst people, and then get suckered by them, which he did with the Iran deal and all of those things. Now, if President Trump says, on the one hand, he'd like to make peace with those, or see if it's possible to make peace through strength with our enemies, North Korea, China, Russia, then that's a horrible thing to do, according to the Democrats. We shouldn't even be speaking to them. Well, there certainly won't be any peace deal if he doesn't speak to them. And it works the other way, too. So it's this double standard hypocrisy that's unbelievable. Where were all of these folks on Syria when President Obama drew his red line, and then when they crossed the red line, did nothing? Where was the Democratic leadership then?
Let me, you know, the hypocrisy reigns. And of course, then we do have some Russia collusion. And that's the dirty dossier Hillary paid for and was disseminated to the public for the purpose of destroying Donald Trump with Russian lies. And nobody seems to care at all about that. Or the Russian dossier was used to spy on Carter Page, a Trump campaign associate. And to do that, we now have the knowledge. Greg Jarrett, Bruce Orr warned everybody that Christopher Steele hated Trump, Hillary was paying for it, and it's not verified, but yet it became the bulk of information in FISA requests with glaring omissions like Hillary paid for it, and literally putting it forth as gospel truth, and they never even checked it at all.
You know, Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Number One said, "A dangerous ambition more often lurks behind the specious mask of zeal." And Hamilton knew more than anybody else how
power
corrupts.
I got a question.
Corrupts.
Did you know that off the top of your head, or are you just showing off and reading it and pretending like you knew it?
I confess that in college I became addicted to the Federalist Papers, so yes, that's committed to memory.
Oh, my God. Well, I can quote Thomas Paine, 1776, where the guides and dictates of one's conscience irresistibly obeyed, there would be no need for any other lawmaker. You know, he sets out and he goes, "Government in its best state is but a necessary evil, in its worst state an intolerable one." So I'll match you quote for quote today. Go ahead.
I'm just teasing. If that's helpful at all.
Yeah, you would think this. By the way, that's something that would happen in a frat house. You're right.
But the point of Hamilton and so many others as they were drafting this Constitution is that they were worried about the corruption and dishonesty that power seems to infect people with. And we've seen that here. This was a corrupt FBI and Department of Justice that got in bed with the Hillary Clinton campaign and Democrats. They paid for a fabricated Russian information and fed it to the FBI and the DOJ in order to damage Trump and later destroy him when he became president, to undo democracy and the election results. And that's really the story of the Russia hoax. But the story details are still unfolding. And
That's why I say Greg has to write the sequel. I've said it many times. I'm very serious about this. You're just learning this week. If you hadn't been digging on this Hannity show throughout this whole period, we'd have nothing. But because you have, we have plenty. Greg has to write now what we're learning about Nellie Orr's research on the Trump family. Can you imagine how big this cover-up has been if we're only now finding out more material details? I don't think we've scratched the surface yet. And if ever there was so-called, you know, crooked opposition research, how about what the Clinton campaign was doing? It's unbelievable.
You know, look at the story today. So for over a good year, maybe a year and a half, you have Donald Trump Jr. being accused of obtaining the phone records, which showed that Trump Jr. had actually spoken to two longtime Trump family friends. And the New York Times reported citing two people briefed on the matter, and Democrats suspected that Trump Jr. and his then candidate father, you know, were talking after that so-called big Trump Tower meeting. You know, he tweeted out today about Adam Schiff, and he was saying, well, they wouldn't let us get the phone records because Senate investigators are the one that found it. And he said, you know what? After a year of hearing about this one ad nauseum, yet another left-wing narrative officially bites the dust. The media has been wrong the whole time, Greg Jarrett. There's only been a few of us, including the three of us here, that have had this story right and corroborated.
And as I've said before, there has been no shortage of media malpractice in the age of Donald Trump. The media so hated the person and what he stood for and his policies and politics that they decided to drive a narrative that was completely false. They glommed on to the Russian hoax and drove it day in and day out to destroy Trump. And, you know, the BuzzFeed story and now what we found out over the last 24 hours, that, you know, the media and Democrats kept insisting that the president and his son had colluded together to collude with Russia in the Trump Tower meeting. First of all, the Tower meeting was not a crime. And second of all, now we know that Don Jr. didn't call his father. He was calling a couple of friends, or they were calling him. So, you know, yet another
It's a pretty spectacular fail, but here's the problem. They're just going to keep doing it. And seemingly getting away with it. And they have built up an expectation that they've got them, that there was collusion. And there's no...
That's the big danger. That's right.
And look at Roger Stone. I mean, a process crime again. 27 agents, SWAT teams, you know, armored vehicles, 17 vehicles in total for lying to Congress.
I think if you put it all together, what you see is using now people like an Andrew Weissman, this Mueller investigation, and the media to accomplish what couldn't be accomplished through the ballot box. They're simply going to tear apart. I think one of the dangers of what the media is doing is they don't care that they got it wrong. If they said it, people are going to believe it. You know, there's a unfortunately notorious character in history who did that sort of thing. You say it, you know, you lie enough times, it just doesn't matter whether it was true or not. People believe it. It almost becomes the truth in their perception, at least. So attacking Trump, knocking him down, and then picking off his allies one at a time through the criminal justice system by making it so expensive they can't defend against the cases. They plead guilty to things they didn't commit. And then they say, you see what Mueller's accomplished? He's got 30-something convictions already. For what? Look at the amount of money and time wasted. It's simply to do what you couldn't do at the ballot box and then decimate, you know, the Trump team,
whether it's
true or not.
It is. We have now criminalized political differences and weaponized some of the most powerful people in the intelligence community. We know with surveillance, unmasking, and leaking raw intelligence, even the upper levels of the most prestigious law enforcement group in the country, the FBI under James Comey and McCabe and James Baker, two of them under criminal investigation that we know of, maybe more soon, and the Department of Justice. It's frightening that more Americans don't understand this is really dangerous and the double standard that we see every day. We don't, you know, all the people that we know that lied to Congress have not had pre-dawn raids with 27 armed agents and armored vehicles. We'll take a break. More with David Cho, more with Greg Jarrett on the other side. All right, as we continue, number one best-selling author Greg Jarrett, the Russian hoax, criminal defense attorney, civil liberties attorney David Schoen. Question I get asked the most is, well, what about all those people that, you know, how did they fix her investigation? She obviously obstructed justice and had secret government information on a server. People ask me, well, what about those people that purposely lied and committed a fraud to a FISA court? What about those people that signed off on a warrant and they didn't verify it? When are they going to get in trouble? I don't even know how to answer them at this point, Greg, because it's frustrating to me.
Of course it is. But there are two people that are key to holding these folks accountable. And one of them is William Barr, who will become the Attorney General of the United States, who has vowed to hold them accountable, to get to the bottom of it, to investigate them. The other one is Lindsey Graham, the new chairman of the Judiciary Committee, who has vowed to do the same thing. So these are two people that I'm optimistic will bring to light the corrupt acts, the misdeeds, the crimes, in my judgment, that were committed by people at the FBI, the Department of Justice, and to some extent those in the Hillary Clinton campaign. As you pointed out, more than half a dozen of them made false statements. They lied, and documents show they lied, and Comey knew they lied and was confronted with the question, why aren't you prosecuting them?
Didn't Comey lie when he was warned in August about the FISA warrant, the first one he signed in October? I mean, he verifies it's true.
He lied to the FISA court. He deceived the judges.
Okay, and then, but wait a minute. October 2016, he does the FISA, but then when he meets in Trump Tower with President-elect Trump, he said it's unverified. And he says to this day he's never verified it. David, real quick, we'll let you answer that.
Yeah, you're 100% right. He's lied over and over and over again. And the answer to the question I think those people ask you is, these same people, Comey, McCabe, and all of those, were in power at the time Hillary did these things. The question is, politically, do we have the strength to do what has to be done now? Greg is right. It's got to come from Barr. I'm skeptical, but I hope that's right. I hope what Greg said is right and happens.
If it doesn't, there's no equal justice under the law, and the Constitution, our foundation for all laws, you know, you're shredding it. Thank you both. All right, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. There's a movie that came out in light of what happened in New York and Virginia, and now the big cause celeb of ninth month up to the birthing moment, you know, infanticide, about the Gosnell case. Those filmmakers join us next in our news roundup hour. We'll get to your calls and play a lot more of the president earlier today. Straight ahead. I can't believe Spartacus is in and thinks that it's very important. I'm in. I'm running. Spartacus running for president. Anyway, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. As we've talked a lot about this week, the shocking new push, radical, extreme socialist Democratic Party, why they want to make abortion up to the moment of birth an issue, I have no idea. But it seems to be spreading from New York to Virginia to Rhode Island to New Mexico and California. And what's even more amazing is the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Northam. Remember, he made this stupid comment that we talked a lot about. Let me remind
third trimester
you.
Abortions. These are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
Delivered, the baby will be delivered, made comfortable. Then the parents will decide if there is difficulty breathing and the child needs resuscitation. Then we'll have a discussion. So you would think that maybe the governor would rethink that position just, you know, knowing that he's describing infanticide and a human life separate and apart from the mother, and saying, no, the mother has the right not to let that baby live and try to do everything possible to help that individual. No, no, no. This great, brilliant governor of the great Commonwealth of Virginia doubles down on stupid.
Do you regret what you said yesterday or the way you said it?
No, I don't. And you know, Alan, I appreciate the question. I'm a physician. I'm also the governor. But when I'm asked questions, a lot of times it is put in the context of being a physician. Again, realizing, you know, how we approach, how we manage patients, how we offer advice and counseling. So no, I don't have any regrets. But I do find, you know, that how my comments, I did answer that question. I regret that those comments have been mischaracterized. The personal insults toward me, I really find disgusting. So, again, as I said in my comments just earlier, you know, we can agree to disagree, Alan, but let's be civil.
Oh, we can agree. He's making himself out to be the victim and not the baby that's delivered, that's made comfortable, that we may not resuscitate. It's up to the mother. And we'll have discussions and tea and crumpets. Now, remember, this went to a hearing. It finally got voted down in the House of Delegates. But remember, all these Democrats voting for it. This is now a Democratic, but one of their main item agendas. Why? I don't know. Because everybody that I know that says or describes themselves as pro-choice, they're like 3 months when the baby's not viable. And everyone that has heard this is shocked to the core, their soul. This is not abortion. This is infanticide. Now, remember the exchange, the woman that wants to save the caterpillars at the same time she was introducing this bill, and she answered the question, well, if a woman is dilating and the birth process has begun, do you then still allow it? And she said yes. Now here's how she doubled down.
Right now, women are able to access an abortion in the later stages of pregnancy under certain conditions with the approval of medical doctors. I've done nothing to change that.
For an abortion at any point in the third trimester, you're changing the standard?
I'm changing the standard, yes.
Okay, all right.
I've done nothing to change that.
For an abortion at any point in the third trimester, you're changing the standard?
I'm changing the standard, yes.
Okay, all right.
Oh, you contradicted yourself. Unbelievable. What's amazing, it comes at a time where there is a movie that has come out about the trial of Gosnell, the untold story of America's most prolific serial killer, did tremendously well in theaters and known to do these late-term abortions. The descriptions, I mean, are as evil and grotesque as anything I've ever heard. Didn't get a lot, well, frankly, any promotion, I think, in any of the media. But I think the LA Times and Forbes were among the few news organizations that even recognized the film. And anyway, the film's put together, and it did incredibly well, way beyond anyone's expectations. Pretty interesting. Anyway, as we talk about this now also coming to the screen at a time where this has now become a big issue for the Democratic Radical Socialist Extreme Party of the U.S., joining us now is Ann McElhaney and Philem McAleer, making sure I'm getting everyone's last name right here. And they're the team behind this Gosnell movie, which is called Gosnell, the untold story of America's most prolific serial killer. First of all, congratulations. I hear that the movie debuted and did extremely well.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we were very lucky. We were the number one biggest opening movie in October for a small movie like ours, you know, funded by 30,000 great people, some of them, many of them your listeners, you know, who raised $2.3 million in 45 days. Yeah, it was a great achievement, and we're really proud.
Well, I think that's an, and I'm sure it's going to make it to, you know, DVD and be on demand pretty shortly here.
Right now it is.
Explain the Gosnell story. I don't know if Philem or Ann, whoever wants to answer this, just give a synopsis. Remind people of just how horrible this was in the trial that followed thereafter.
Cameron Gosnell is America's biggest serial killer. His ways of doing abortions were the babies were born alive, and then he would snip their necks with scissors and kill them. They would be alive, and he would kill them, just as the governor is suggesting in many ways. I mean, and he would allow unlicensed staff to perform abortions, and the New York law that just passed, that's one of the stipulations in the law is that unlicensed staff can now perform abortions. So, I mean, it's a big question if Kermit Gosnell would have been found guilty if he had been living in New York. He lived in Philadelphia. So the media at the time refused to cover it, of course, because they don't want to talk about anything that's trying to negative spotlight on abortion. So we made this film. We crowdfunded it. Almost 30,000 people funded it. It's coming out on DVD. It's number one best-selling DVD on Amazon.com. There's a hunger for truth. There's a hunger for what's really going on in America at the moment. And, you know, the media need to stop covering up this story and put the truth out there.
Yeah. And the reaction of the audience is, you know, I will tell you that when you talk about abortion, which I don't really talk a lot more about, and the president addressed this, that it's almost a 50-50 issue, although it seems more people, as medical technology has become available, like 4D sonograms. My niece just had a baby, and the difference between the sonogram I had of my kids going back, you know, 20 and 17 years ago, and the quality and the definition and the, you know, you see details of every part of this child that's growing inside of a woman. It's remarkable. And it also is conscious raising in terms of, well, this is really a human being with a human form, shape, fingers and toes and everything in between. So, but I do think people have pretty much hardened their positions. I don't even think what we're talking about regarding these laws, though, Anne, we're not talking about abortion here. We're talking about, you know, look at what the governor said. Well, first we'll deliver the baby. We'll make sure the baby's comfortable. Then the mother will decide whether or not we don't resuscitate the baby or whether the baby gets to stay alive or not. I don't think at that point it's anybody's decision. And if you allow that, you allow infanticide.
Yeah, and I think what's really, you know, that's kind of a good thing about the governor's words and about Representative Tran. And the good thing is that I think we're going to now have an honest conversation about abortion. I think one of the things that we've noticed through making the movie, and the reason we made this movie, by the way, in the first place, was we were there for the trial. We read the court transcript, and they had a good abortion doctor. They had a legal abortion doctor come and explain to the jury, you know, how does this look? How do we do this? How do you do a good, proper legal abortion? And the jury, I can tell you, because I interviewed them, were more shocked by what was legal than what Gosnell did in the murders that he did. They were shocked that this is what's legal in America. And I think we're in a really extraordinary moment here, a historic moment. And I think the president has recognized that. And I'm really happy that I think it's Tuesday, which is the same day as the DVD comes out, he's going to talk about abortion at the State of the Union. And I'm really happy about that. And he's going to get specific. I imagine he's going to get specific. And let Americans know, do you know you're living in a country where you can abort a baby up to 9 months? And I can tell you, I've traveled the length and breadth of this country talking also to pro-lifers who don't know that. And the one good thing about Representative Tran and the governor of Virginia is people now are finding out these details. And I can tell you, my experience is that when people find out, they don't like it. They don't like it. And I like the idea of the 2020 election.
Well, because people have
about abortion.
Listen, even people that I know that are friends of mine that I have a different opinion on now, they're pretty much locked into, all right, 3 months, because the child at that point is not viable. But with medical advancement, I mean, that line goes back further and further in terms of the ability to have a baby premature and the baby survive and thrive in life, et cetera. But this, when you ask them, they even say they don't like it at all, that it's not a good option ever. And these are people that say first trimester pro-choice. And when they see this, they just go, this is
what's really
barbaric.
Good about it. This is what's really great, I think, about this moment. And I know that sounds really bizarre, but I think there's an incredible amount of ignorance out there about what is legal in America. And a lot of people don't know, for example, that the laws here in America can be compared only to places like China, North Korea, Pakistan. These are the people we're in bed with when it comes to abortion law. The Europeans, the liberal Europeans, have nothing like the laws that you have here. There are at least 7 states in the United States where you can have an abortion right up to 40 weeks. Absolutely. And by the way, in all the other states, it's pretty wishy-washy. So people need to know that. And I think when people know that, I think we're going to have a really honest conversation. Because then we start to ask people and we start to have the conversation, well, how do you do it? How do you do this? And I can tell you what, the reason we made this movie, and we have it verbatim in the movie, the good abortion doctor, the legal abortion doctor, played fabulously by Janine Turner, she sits there, and we took it verbatim from the trial transcripts. Well, you pull out a leg, and you pull out an arm. This is the doctor who believes strenuously that what she is doing is right. I think people need to hear that, need to have that conversation, and I'm so happy the president is thrown himself into this, and he has been the most pro-life president ever.
I got a break here, but you know, you're right. And listen, when I told people in 2016 he will govern conservatively, I did have the, I guess, perspective of having known him for 20 plus years, and it turned out to be right. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Ann McElhaney is with us. Also, Phelim McAleer and their movie, Gosnell, The Untold Story of America's Most Prolific Serial Killer. I guess it's coming out in DVD. When it does, we'll put it on Hannity.com. 800-941-SEAN is our number. News roundup, information overload. President had an amazing appearance today. We're going to play some of that. Get to your calls next hour. Straight ahead. All right, as we continue, we're joined by Ann McElhaney and Phelim McAleer. Now, they both are the team behind this movie that exceeded all expectations, called Gosnell, The Untold Story of America's Most Prolific Serial Killer. Did tremendously well in theaters, and at some point coming out in DVD. We'll let you know when that happens. Back to you, Phelim, for just a second. Do you agree with Ann's assessment that the events of this week, that when people fully, completely understand what we're talking about, what we're describing, that it will have an impact on changing people's hearts?
Totally. The jury in the Gosnell trial were purged before they went on. You weren't allowed to be on the jury unless you were pro-choice, because they couldn't trust pro-lifers. That's what they said. At the end of the trial, nobody on the jury was a comfortable pro-choicer. Many of them shifted to pro-life. All of them had their faith and abortion shattered. And that's what the truth about abortion does when you hear it in a trial. I think pro-lifers should just pull back, relax now, and let these pro-choicers describe abortion and describe these what these abortion laws should entail. Because that, the truth about abortion, is abortion's biggest enemy.
All right. Thank you. Phelim McAleer and Anne McElhaney, the producers of Gosnell, the untold story of America's most prolific serial killer. We'll put it up on Hannity.com as it appears in DVD. Thank you both for being with us. And again, Virginia, New York, Rhode Island, New Mexico, California, this is not about abortion. This is what they're describing as infanticide. As a country, we got to ask ourselves, what kind of country do we want to ultimately be? This represents the ultimate in innocence. Well, deliver the baby, make the baby comfortable. I'm like, do you even listen to your own words, Governor Northam? All right, as we continue, News Roundup, Information Overload, your calls coming up at the bottom of this half hour. This was such an amazing press conference with the president today. I mean, on everything, border security, just the way he handled the press. I think some of his finest moments. I know a lot of you missed it. We're going to play some here and get your reaction on the other side.
We're getting ready to give out some very big contracts with money that we have on hand and money that comes in. But we will be looking at a national emergency because I don't think anything's going to happen. I think the Democrats don't want border security. And when I hear them talking about the fact that walls are immoral and walls don't work, they know they work. I watched somebody being interviewed the other day by a very good anchor, and the anchor actually was getting angrier and angrier as they tried to explain how a wall doesn't really have that much of an impact, and yet thousands of people are on one side of the wall and nobody's on the other side of the wall. It was actually laughable and really horrible in the same breath. So that's the way it is. You know, if you look at El Paso, if you look at certain places, but El Paso was one of the most dangerous cities in the whole country. Once the wall was completed, it became one of the safest immediately. It wasn't like it took 5 years. Some of you know this. Immediately, it became one of the safest cities in the whole country. We're building the wall. A lot of it is, I mean, the chant now should be finish the wall as opposed to build the wall, because we're building a lot of wall. And I started this 6 months ago. We really started going to town because I could see we're getting nowhere with the Democrats. We're not going to get anywhere with them. It's going to be a part of their campaign, but I don't think it's good politically. And I think Nancy Pelosi should be ashamed of herself because she's hurting a lot of people. I think the Democrats should be ashamed of themselves. Now, in all fairness to the Democrats, many of them want the wall, and I see it. They're just dying to say what they want to say, but they can't say it as well as they would be able to if they were allowed to do it. Yes.
Mr. President, so are you saying now you believe that on February the 15th, the only option you will have left is either close down the government or declare an emergency because you don't have any faith in this committee? We'll come up with an answer. And if you do declare an emergency, are you concerned that you will almost be immediately and be enjoined by some court in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals District?
Well, we have very, very strong legal standing. It would be very hard to do that. But they tend to go to the Ninth Circuit. And when they go to the Ninth Circuit, things happen. For instance, the ban, it missed and then was approved in the United States Supreme Court, where we have had a very good record. They go to the Ninth Circuit in many cases, and in fact, in most cases, it has nothing to do with the Ninth Circuit. It's a shame. Let's see what happens. I can only tell you this, John. We have very, very strong legal standing to win. We are doing it regardless. I mean, we haven't declared the national emergency yet, and yet we're building a lot of wall. We're continuing to build a lot of wall with, as we would say in business, cash on hand. And we're negotiating tough prices. We have a great system, a great wall system. It's very uniform. They used to have all these different systems. Nobody knew what was going on. We have a very good, solid system that looks good and is very powerful as a wall.
But are you saying now you expect to declare a national
emergency? I don't want to say, but you'll hear the State of the Union, and then you'll see what happens right after the State of the Union, okay?
Well, are you going to wait until February 15th to do
that? Yeah, we're building now. I mean, the one thing that I'm trying to stress to people, and I wasn't before because before it meant less, but when I see the obstruction, when I see the tremendous obstruction by Democrats, knowing that the only saving of our southern borders, I mean, you look at these towns. Before the wall, they were crime-ridden. And now, the wall get built. We put up a wall in a certain area, and all of a sudden it went from being a horrible hellhole into something that's really safe. They can't even believe it. The mayors can't even believe it. If you ever took some of the walls down in California, for instance, one story in San Diego, they were begging us to build the wall. I mean, they were putting pressure on us, that area of San Diego, where people were rampant going through. And you'd have a lot of security, but the security can only do so much. As an example, when you have these caravans that are going to be hitting, we've done a great job with the caravan, and most of them have gone back where they're staying on the other side of a wall. They haven't been coming in for the most part, but we've done a great job. We don't have the ammunition because we don't have the barrier, but it's been really amazing to see the difference when you have it and when you don't. It's incredible to see the difference of an area on the other side of a barrier. So, you know, the old expression, walls work whether you like it or not. In Israel, they have a wall, and it was 99.9% successful. And ours are too. When we have it, we're going to be starting in a certain way. We have a few areas that we're starting where they catch up. Once you have the holes in the middle, they just spread, sort of like water, they just spread in, but you have to have it. So when you talk about the committee, I can tell you the Republicans want to have a wall, but the Democrats are told that you can't do that. They are doing a tremendous disservice. The Democrats are doing a tremendous disservice to our country. You heard today about human trafficking. Human trafficking can go down by a tremendous percentage if we had a wall on our southern border. Tremendous. Because it's very hard to do human trafficking through ports of entry because you have people standing there looking and they say, hey, what's going on in the back seat? What's going on in the trunk? They check these things. So they come into areas where you don't have the barriers, and we're not going to let that happen. So we're building a lot of it. We'll be up to about 115 miles of wall, some renovated, some new, and we're going to make a big step in the next week or so prior to my doing anything. But actually having a national emergency does help the process. It would certainly help the process. What would help a lot would be if the Democrats could actually be honest and approve. They're not being honest. Everybody knows they're not being honest. They know they're not being honest. I'd like to hear what they talk about in their rooms when they go back. And I tell you what, a lot of pressure is being put on by Democrats, being put on their leadership. Tremendous pressure is being put on because they cannot justify not having a barrier between our country and Mexico. Mexico just came out yesterday. Numbers were just released. 38,000 people were murdered in Mexico, up like an incredible amount, 30% or something from the year before. 38,000 people were murdered in Mexico. It's one of the most, unfortunately, unsafe countries in the world. We need a protective barrier for our country. And that doesn't include Honduras, who we are not happy with, and we're looking very seriously at taking away all funding. And same thing for Guatemala, and the same thing for El Salvador. It's a disgrace what's going on in those countries. For years and years, the United States has paid them hundreds of millions of dollars, and they do nothing for us. When a caravan starts in the middle of Honduras, obviously, they're allowing it to start. And they want it to start because they want to not have certain people in their country. So what do? They put them in the caravan. And we've had tremendous numbers of criminals that we've caught in the caravans before they get here. So the committee is, I know the Republicans want to do something. And I'm not saying it because I'm a Republican. I'm saying the Democrats are instructed, don't do a wall. And they're always doing that. You hear about human trafficking, drugs, gangs, crime. They're only doing it for one very simple reason. It's one simple reason. Couldn't be simpler. Because they think it's good politics for 2020. Because they say, maybe we can beat Trump because this is a big issue. Now, I've done a lot of other issues. I've done military, where our military is in great shape now. It's strong and ready. It was totally depleted when I got here. Regulation cuts, tax cuts. I mean, we've done more than any other president has ever done in the first 2 years of his presidency. But the wall is a big factor, and they want to use the wall for politics. So it's not going to work because we're building the wall, and it's under construction. Yes.
Mr. President, have you privately decided whether or not you will declare a national emergency? And just to clarify.
Have I privately? What's in my mind?
Well,
certainly thinking about it.
You're thinking ahead.
I think there's a good chance that we'll have to do that. But we will, at the same time, be building, regardless, we're building wall, and we're building a lot of wall, but I could do it a lot faster the other way.
Are you saying that we should be prepared for you to announce at the State of the Union what you are going to do?
Well, I'm saying listen closely to the State of the Union. I think you'll find it very exciting.
Can I get a question real quick?
Yeah.
Are you willing to commit U.S. military if necessary to force peace in the roads?
No, I don't want to say that, but it's always an option. Everything's an option. I take no options off the table. Okay? Thank you.
Mr. President,
but are you thinking of adding on a meeting with Xi Jinping on the back end or the front end?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I mean, some of you were there yesterday. We had an incredible meeting yesterday with the vice premier of China, a very powerful man, highly respected, very strong, very respected also by the president, President Xi. We had an amazing meeting on trade, mostly on trade, actually also on fentanyl. China's agreed to criminalize fentanyl. That's going to have a huge impact on fentanyl coming into the country. But there is a possibility we'll meet somewhere, whether it's there. I'm over in a certain location. I'll be over in a certain location there, as you know.
So you might do it too.
And that'll be announced officially probably next week. So
you might do it too.
It could happen.
It sounds like Da Nang for that summit, sir. Is that a good guess?
Gee, Da Nang. Who does Da Nang remind me of, huh? Certain senator. It's a certain senator that said he was a war hero when he wasn't. He never saw Da Nang.
Have you found the money to pay to build the wall?
Well, we have a lot of money, and that's why we're building it. I mean, we have a lot of money. Don't forget, we had $1.6 billion approved. Then we had another $1.6 billion approved. Now, in theory, we have $1.3 billion approved. But we're renovating a lot of walls that were basically dilapidated. In some cases, it's called a renovation, but it's really much more. It's wall that is in such bad shape that we take it down and we build new wall in certain very important areas. But we're doing a combination of renovation and new wall. But we're doing a lot of it.
But do you, Mr. President, do you need an appropriation from Congress or a national emergency to build all the wall you think is necessary?
We're already appropriated. We have a lot of appropriation. It's already been done. And certain other things we'll be doing that we haven't done yet. And one of the things we're considering, obviously, is a national emergency. And it is. It's an invasion of our country of not only people, not only gangs and criminals and human traffickers. It's an invasion of drugs into our country. It's an invasion like you've never seen before. You talk about heroin. 90% of the heroin coming into our country comes in through the southern border. We can stop so much of that. And I'll tell you this. If we build a proper barrier with all of the technology, which only really works with the barrier, but if we build a proper barrier with great technology too, we will see crime throughout the United States go down in percentages that we've never seen before. It'll be an amazing thing because so much of it comes through the southern border.
Mr. President, follow, can you tell us some of the themes that are important to you in the State of the Union speech?
I think most of the themes you would know. It's economic development, it's success. No country has had the success that we've had over the last 2 years. And I will say this, if the other party got into office, instead of being up and having these phenomenal 304,000 jobs added, and we had so many great months, and, you know, it's been a little bit tricky because I'm in the middle of some very big trade deals, which is disruptive before you make it. But after you make it, those deals are much better than they were before. I don't even mean much better. I mean better like nobody's ever seen before. That includes a deal, if we make the deal with China, you're talking about, it'll be a different world for us. We lost $500 billion a year with China. For many years, 500 billion, not million, 500 billion. We're not going to do that anymore. And our relationship with China is extraordinary. My relationship with the president, she is better, I guarantee, than any relationship of a president and a president. It's not even close. But it can't go on this way. We can't allow this to happen. And if you notice yesterday, and I think it was a big story, or it should have been, but China, as a sign of goodwill, has agreed to purchase a tremendous, massive amount of soybeans and other agricultural product. Our farmers this morning are very happy. I spoke to Sonny Perdue, Secretary of Agriculture. He called me this morning. Our farmers are extremely happy.
Mr. President, in Texas, where you want to build about 168 miles of wall, you can't build the wall right on the border. You've got to build it off the floodplain.
Right.
So you may slow down human traffickers, you may slow down drug runners, you may slow down people who don't want to get caught. But for all these tens of thousands of Central American migrants who just want to touch foot on U.S. soil and wait for the Border Patrol to pick them up, how does building a new wall solve that problem?
Well, we're going to solve the problem, and we're also working on different things because there's so many loopholes. You're right. Touch the land, all of a sudden it's a catch and release deal. They go into the country, and in some cases, if they're criminals, they're released into our country. It's a ridiculous thing. It's a loophole. And if you look at the visa lottery, and if you look at all of these other chain migration, we have to fix all of it, John. It's very important. The wall is the most important thing by far, but we have to fix the loopholes. You're 100% right. Okay, yeah, please.
Nancy Pelosi says you're risking enormous race with Russia today. What's your answer?
Say it again?
Nancy Pelosi says you're risking a new arms race with Russia. What's your answer?
Honestly, I don't think she has a clue. I really don't. I don't think Nancy has a clue. And I see that when she says walls are immoral. She doesn't have, she doesn't know. And I wish she did, because she's hurting this country so badly. It's all rhetorical, not delivered well, but it's all rhetorical. She's hurting our country very, very badly, even with statements like that. Okay, thank you very much, everybody.
Keep moving. Let's go.
All right,
guys, let's go.
Move.
Let's go. John, let's go.
Go ahead, John.
Pulling out of the IMF, is this as much about the threat in the Western Pacific from China? Is it the emerging threat from China?
No, the reason is, first of all, you have to add countries, obviously, it's old. But very importantly, one side has not been adhering to it. We have, but one side hasn't. So unless they're going to adhere, we shouldn't be the only one. I hope that we're able to get everybody in a very big and beautiful room and do a new treaty that would be much better. But, because certainly I would like to see that. But you have to have everybody adhere to it. And you have a certain side that almost pretends it doesn't exist, pretty much pretends it doesn't exist. So unless we're going to have something that we all agree to, we can't be put at the disadvantage of going by a treaty, limiting what we do when somebody else doesn't go by that treaty. Okay?
All right, 25 now until the top of the hour. All right, your calls next. Why is it, maybe you feel the same way as me, it's like there's such an urgency, and the speed of news now is like the speed of light, and it's breaking ever so quickly. Now, we'll get to your calls on what was an amazing press conference, I thought, with the president today. And I told you in 2016 he's going to govern as a conservative. I turned out to be right. Warned you in 2008 and 7 that Obama's a rigid, radical, left-wing ideologue. That turned out to be true, and his policies would fail. We have been telling you about the deep state, and I've been telling you lately, so those of you that doubted and are doubting, that Trump's gonna be so unrelenting, tenacious in the fight for this border wall money, and it was just a shift in strategy. I think I'll be proven right there, too. Just take a deep breath. Weekend's here. Super Bowl Sunday coming up. Have fun with family, friends, whoever you're hanging out with. Maybe going to a local bar, ordering food you shouldn't eat, and enjoying every bite of it. That sounds like the perfect Sunday to me. All right, let's get to our busy telephones here. We'll start in New York. The all-new AM 710 WOR, the talk of New York, and that is Perry. Perry, hi, how are you? Glad you called. Perry, are you there? Hello, Perry. All right, we shall move on. We'll stay in New York. Peter, also from New York. Peter, welcome to the program. Glad you called.
Hey, Sean, thanks for having me. First, I'm a parent of a child with a disability. I'm also an advocate for people with disabilities. And right now, Sean, approximately 120,000 babies are born in this country. One in every 33, 120,000 babies are born with birth defects. And whether it's autism, spina bifida, Down syndrome, now all of a sudden, Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, has proposed and passed a law that essentially is going to cleanse society in Andrew Cuomo's world, because there are more beautiful children on this planet that have been born by no fault of their own with disabilities who, yes, need extra care. And there's those of us out there who want to care for them. But now the Democrats have chosen to murder all of these unborn babies, and it's so egregious. But thank God for folks like you, but we need advocates for the unborn, because we know that when the doctors want to tell the news to the expecting mom that their child could be born with a disability, that conversation in New York State is going to go right to that option where that child can be terminated. And God forbid, if a woman falls in the third trimester and then they see that a disability is developing, and now you see where this law is going to kill so many unborn babies,
Let me interrupt you and say it this way. Look, we have, I don't know the exact number of weeks of pregnancy. I'm not sure, but we have the medical technology now between blood tests, sonograms, and amniocentesis, which I'm pretty sure is still, they get the amniotic fluid, and they can test for pretty much all of the things you mentioned and more. And I know that there's a significant part of the country that would support that in the first 3 months. I'm not in the process here of trying to convince people on the issue that I believe life begins at conception. I think most people have hardened their positions. You're not going to change it. Talking about it, you know, it just, but this is something, as I said, this is not about abortion, what we're talking about here. This is a gruesome, grotesque, literally what, for example, the governor of the Commonwealth described. You cannot describe it as anything else than infanticide. We'll deliver the baby. We'll make the baby comfortable. Only the mother will decide if it gets resuscitated, if it stops breathing, and then we'll have a discussion about what we're going to do. That's a human being sitting there. I think that honest people, I know good people that just disagree with when life begins and viability for everybody that I know, every person, is absolutely at that point with all the choices, times, and availability of care available that are out there. None of them support this. And of course, the ability to test for those things too. But, you know, I know it's hard. I know so many parents that have had special needs kids, one issue or another. And I watch people, what I learn about them and their kids is that they're amazingly loving, selfless people that actually serve, you know, somebody that needs care in some cases every day of their lives. They're amazing. And their own personal lives in many of these cases are put totally on hold for the rest of their life. And then you meet kids that, you know, but whatever it is that they've had to deal with themselves, and you see remarkable goodness, innocence, and wonder in them. That's what, to me, what is of value. And especially when there are a lot of choices, you know, we're pretty sophisticated, actually, as a society, having figured out, finally, we know how pregnancy occurs. And we do know that if you want to prevent a pregnancy, it really takes very little effort to do that, and the availability and is not an issue, and the expense should not be an issue for most people, what we're talking about. But, you know, this is about barbarity, what kind of society we want to be, the conscience of a nation, the goodness of its people, about protecting simply the most innocent among us. You know, the idea that this delegate in the House of Commons in Virginia, Tran, at the same time she's talking about her bill that even if a woman's dilating, the mother would have the choice to abort that child, saying that very thing, even she looked uncomfortable describing her own bill, you know, puts in a bill to protect the caterpillars. And I'm literally like, how do you have such a disconnect? The governor's statement, how does he not hear his own words? We'll deliver the baby. We'll make the baby comfortable. The mother will decide if the baby stops breathing, whether to resuscitate. And then we'll have a discussion about what we want to do here. Meanwhile, there is a viable human being laying right there. The ultimate in innocence, incapable of doing anything to protect themselves. And the question has to be, do we as a society have a moral compass and conscience that sees the value of that kid perfectly formed right there? And it will define the soul of this country, where we end up on this, in my opinion. Anyway, I hope that answers your question, but that sums it up for me. And I think a lot of people this week have learned a lot, and why the Democrats have now made this a top priority, and it's spreading to state after state. It's inexplicable on so many levels. All right, as we continue, and we've got to wrap these things up. Look, I've been being very cautious and careful. I know a lot of you have been tweeting, texting, and emailing me this story, but until we were able to actually get it from the Washington Times, Apple News, and other places, we were just being careful. Well, it looks like Mr. Governor Ralph Northam, you know, the guy that says, well, we'll deliver the baby and we'll make it comfortable and the mother will decide if the baby stops breathing, if we'll resuscitate the baby, and then we'll have a discussion. Well, the Washington Times headline is Northam yearbook profile included blackface KKK costume photo. That's right. The Commonwealth of Virginia governor featured, quote, in blackface and Ku Klux Klan robes on his profile page in a medical school yearbook. And the photograph shows two men, apparently Mr. Northam and a friend, one dressed, quote, in blackface and another dressed as a hooded Klansman. The photo was first reported by Big League Politics. Now it's going viral. We just wanted to be careful. We'll have a lot more. Judge Pirro is in for me tonight on Hannity. She'll be covering it. Have a great, great Super Bowl weekend. Eat anything you want on Super Bowl Day. And I wouldn't bet against Brady, Belichick, and Robert Kraft. Just my own opinion. I just hope it's a close game. Have a great Super Bowl weekend. We'll have more on this and everything else on Monday. We'll see you then.